Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's just one week at a time. That's what it is. You got to really maintain your focus. You got to wire into that week. Put everything you have into that week. All your preparation, all your focus, and it goes all the way through, you know, that practice week like we just had. I thought we had some good, you know, really good practices, like I said. And then it's the 48-hour preparation I always talk about. It's about wiring in. You know, guys are all in on their jobs, doing their jobs, but you have to study, you know, 48-hour preparation. You got to get yourself ready to go emotionally, but also physically and mentally at the same time. So that's individual responsibility to the team for each player, and that's the phase we're in right now.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That voice you heard was the inexplicably still employed Matt Eberflus. Talk about him in a moment. But listen, you, all of you, this coming Friday, November 15th, join The Score at the world-famous Brat Stop in Kenosha for the return of the Brat Bowl. Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi will broadcast live from 10 to 2, followed by Spiegel and Holmes from 2 to 6 that afternoon as they get you ready for Chicago versus Green Bay. There will also be a coat drive. Bring your gently worn or brand new coats. And a Brat Stop will give you a dollar coupon, one coupon per customer for a dollar off. That's Friday from 10 to 6 at the Brat Shop in Kenosha. It's all brought to you by Ziegler Subaru of Kenosha. For a great experience, visit ZieglerSubaru.com and by Pottawatomie Sportsbook. So, we're going to go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And welcome to the show from the 33rd team. And I recommend you check out the 33rdteam.com. It is an all-star of thoughts, analysis, a whole lot of different views, the prism of the NFL told in so many different ways. We welcome to the show Sam Monson. Sam, thanks for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Well, is there an analytic, is there a metric for showing how bad a coach Matt Eberflus is?
Yeah, I could tell from the introduction you're a big fan of his continued employment.
Yeah, it's inexplicable. I don't know why a guy who has done so many things wrong, including endangering the quarterback at the end of a game, you're down by 20 points and trying to, and then doubling down on it the next day by saying, well, we're always trying to get better. We're always going to fight to the end. And this rah-rah high school stuff will get your franchise quarterback or supposed franchise quarterback hurt. And I just don't know. The debate about, what does a baseball manager mean? How many wins and losses? There seems to be a much more dominant shadow of a football coach and much more dominant influence. Have you broken that down? Can you tell what a coach is worth in the NFL, what this coach is worth?
I think a coach can be worth in the NFL. The problem is that head coach as a job, as a title, it's about seven different jobs in one, you mm-hmm. know, and it's really difficult trying to nail down exactly how much the individual in that position is responsible for each one of those different portions. And when one of them is failing, how much that should weigh against the others, right? And in particular, I think it's difficult when that coach comes from a particular side of the ball and it's the other side that's struggling, right? So Eberflus generally is a defensive guy. The Bears defense has been doing really good. The offense with Caleb Williams is still a work in progress, and that's where the problems lie. So does Eberflus carry the can for that part of it, or is that a failure of the kind of hiring cycle, right, where it's not directly his fault, but ultimately it's his fault for not having the right coach as offense coordinator, being able to up that side's game. So I think there's definitely several areas where Eberflus is coming up short relative to other guys. Honestly, the short answer for why he's still there is they're 500. You know, they're not dead and buried yet. And if things had gone the other way, if they'd lost a couple more games, I think he definitely would be on a much hotter seat than he is right now.
Well, I think money has something to do with it, too, whatever the extended. It's not like NFL sure. teams have to worry about money, but the Bears act like they're the smallest market in the world, as opposed to a heritage franchise that should demand better, should have a higher bar, should have a lot less shame and a lot more pride, and do it a lot quicker than it has happened. But I think the contract, as well as the record you talk about, if they were to lose to the Patriots at home, I would think the screaming would be so loud. I'm already rooting for the Bears to lose to the Patriots at home. Ideally, here's my scenario, Sam, is I want Caleb Williams to throw three touchdowns and throw for 300 yards, and the Bears to lose, to give up 30 points. Eberflus's defense to give up 30 points to Drake May and the Patriots, who currently hold the number one overall draft pick. So that's what I would like, and I don't think the Bears are going to do that. When you look at the numbers, what do you expect from tomorrow's game?
I think it's going to be a fun game. You know, when Drake May got given that starting position, I kind of feared for his life a little bit. The Patriots' situation around him is terrible. They have no kind of receiving help. The offensive line is the worst in the NFL on paper, and it was, you know, Jacoby Brissett was the kind of sacrificial lamb just thrown out there to take the beating while we protected Drake May. So when he was thrown out there, it felt like a recipe for disaster. But he's really up the level of that offense. And, you know, he's still working with those limitations. The offensive line is still bad. There's still no receiver help to speak of. But he's not overwhelmed. He's not drowning out there. He's not in over his head. Now, he's still making some rookie mistakes, as you would expect, but it's working. It's functional. And honestly, a lot of the hits he's taken have kind of been by his own making, like hits that he didn't need to take and that he could have protected himself from, rather than ones that came from the offensive line. So I think Caleb Williams is definitely working with a better situation and support system around him. But Drake May has made it work in New England. So I think it becomes another one of these interesting rookie-on-rookie matchups. And before Jaden Daniels kind of came out of nowhere, this was supposed to be, you know, the top of the draft battle, right? The one versus two, mm-hmm. Caleb Williams versus Drake May. So we kind of get to see that, albeit in a different way than we were expecting.
Well, they're both dealing with offensive lines that are suspect at this point. How have you graded the Bears' offensive line? And I know you're just guessing about where they're going to be, who's going to be playing, who's going to be starting, what their options are tomorrow, but how have you graded the Bears' offensive line, and what are the difficulties? I've always thought it was difficult for you in your line of work to, this is Sam Monson from the 33rd team, and we're talking about right now the analytics of an offensive line. It's always difficult to know whose assignment is what and where and who didn't get a call and who checked off and what should have happened and why. I always thought that was difficult. So your raw ratings, or the ratings you have of offensive line, where are the Bears? Where were they expected to be? Where are they actually now? And what are the problems with sussing out even greater, more acute ratings for offensive linemen?
Yeah, and I think it's particularly difficult when you're dealing with a sort of young, inexperienced quarterback who has some control over the protections. You know, when you're dealing with an offensive line and, let's say, Tom Brady is your quarterback, right, or Peyton Manning, you know, generally speaking, when somebody screws up, it's not the quarterback, right? It's the offensive lineman, right? The protection was probably called correctly, and the guy that blocked differently to the other four people is the guy that made the mistake. When you're looking at an offensive line and there's instant pressure and it looks like it could have been, could have, should have been picked up, and we're dealing with a young quarterback who's got control over protections, now you start to get into this difficult scenario of, well, did the lineman screw up? Was the protection called wrong? You know, is the running back in the wrong place? It gets a lot more muddy to try and work that out. So when you look at, you know, PFF grades, the Bears' offensive line isn't as bad as it seems. On an individual basis, those guys are not grading terribly. But then when you turn on the tape, one of the biggest problems is just the volume of, like, instant pressure that Caleb Williams is under. Like, there's so many of the plays, it's broken down, like, the second he gets to the top of his dropback and the play's already dead on arrival. So I think some of it is that they're not losing as often as it feels like they are, but when they're losing horribly right away. And I think a big part of that is that some of the losses or some of the screw-ups are protection issues rather than, you know, an individual guy getting beaten one-on-one by just a better player. So I think that all goes together to kind of make this feel like it's a lot worse than it could be if they straightened out the kind of mental side of it.
If you were to come up with a number about rating the Bears' offensive line, do you factor in that there is such a lightning-like effect when they get beat so badly, so a protection call as opposed to one guy, that it's so bad, that is that factored into the way you come up with a number, you come up with a rating, or the way you're able to rank offensive lines?
Yeah, well, so if somewhere like PFF are just going to, they're just going to grade you. The severity of the defeat, like the speed of the loss, is definitely factored into PFF grades. So that will get rolled into the individual grades of the offensive line. But when you're sort of rolling it all up and looking at an offensive line as a unit, they're not kind of scaling that. They're not compounding those errors together to kind of doubly affect the offensive line. And that's, I think, where that actually does make an impact is you don't just kind of add up all the losses of the five guys, because it can have a compounding effect. When multiple guys are losing at once, that takes a play from being, okay, the quarterback's got to get on the move, but he can reset, only one guy's broken through, to the quarterback has no shot here. The play is dead. Three guys are steaming right towards him. There is no pocket to speak of. So it has a kind of outsized magnifying effect when multiple guys are losing at once. And that's the story with the Bears right now. So I think when you start to look at an offensive line as a whole unit, I think that's where it becomes a bigger issue as a group than it is on an individual level.
You talked about looking at the tape as well as in assessing grades and grading them out. Have you noticed, I'm asking this because the hits that Caleb Williams has taken and the lack of success, the inaccuracy we have seen when this was a guy who was supposed to be able to hit every target from every arm angle, and that hasn't been the case. So have you noticed the beginning of bad habits, deterioration of fundamentals in what you've seen of him?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily the beginning of bad habits, but I think it's when you start to massively ramp up things like pressure and, you know, plays breaking down and just the offense as a whole not functioning. I think quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, start to lean on those bad habits. So they're always kind of there. And really a lot of it is the balance and can you minimize those types of things. So, you know, mechanically, he did have spectacular accuracy in college. He just understood how to throw the ball to a moving target, hit it in stride and perfectly. Now it's been off and his accuracy has been nowhere near where we expected it to be coming out of college. And it's not, you know, you don't just forget how to throw an accurate football, but I think when you're processing 17 different things at the same time at the NFL level, everything's moving quicker, your mechanics just start to break down. And we saw that with Baker Mayfield earlier in his career as well. He was one of the most accurate college quarterbacks we'd ever seen coming into the league. And really, one of the biggest defining characteristics of the first few years of his career in Cleveland was, like, where had that gone? He wasn't accurate anymore. He was just on a fundamental level, significantly less likely to hit a target than he was in college, whether or not he was pressured. I think that just happens when the guy's not comfortable. And then once he gets back into a groove, kind of adjust himself to the to this level. The game, you know, that cliche of the game slowing down for him. I think once that happens, the kind of basic fundamental mechanic side of it just comes back to you. Like it's something I think that goes away when you're playing 100 miles an hour mentally and you just lose control over the things that were muscle memory before.
We're talking with Sam Monson of the 33rd Team. It's a terrific website. Go to 33rdteam.com and you have your choice of all things football. So many things football. By the way, I want to run a couple. These are just plain stats. I don't know if there's an interpretation that goes along with it, but they caught my eye this week. From Jay Kuda, a local genius, had put together Jared Goff's last five games. 1,000-plus passing yards, 10-plus passing TDs with no interceptions, a completion percentage of 80%-plus, never been done before over a five-game span. That's just stunning, it seems to me. What do you make of what you've seen of Jared Goff and how this has progressed to the point where he's Jared Goff all caps?
Yeah, I mean, he's looking spectacular. And the funny thing is, the first 2 weeks of the season, he was playing pretty badly. And after week two, we were sort of like, well, Detroit's looking good. They're winning games. And Jared Goff hasn't been playing good football at all. If that happens, this team could be unstoppable. And that's kind of where we are right now, that Goff is now playing lights out and everything else has remained as good as it was. I think a big part of that as well is Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator. Goff is also the most blitzed quarterback in the NFL this season. And they just have answers across the board. You watch them play Brian Flores in the Vikings defense, which has caused, you know, no end of trouble to an awful lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL over the last couple of years. Again, Ben Johnson's offense and the Lions, they had answers almost every single time, and they were able to execute and deliver the ball where it needed to go, despite the disguise, the misdirection, the blitz looks. So Goff playing the way he's playing right now and the speed and explosiveness and power with that offensive line that that group has, you know, this is one of the most difficult offenses in the NFL to stop.
And the other stunning true fact I came across this week came from a Twitter feed of Sarah York. The Chiefs won two Super Bowls between Daniel Jones's most recent two passing touchdowns at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, absolutely mind-blowing stat. We had that one on our show as well.
I don't think anybody could let that go, but I had to bring that to the air. And like that's when you see that, you just pause for a moment and go, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So what do you make of the fear is that the Bears are going to pay their version of Daniel Jones, I think.
Daniel Jones is such a sort of strange quarterback story because, you know, early in his career, I mean, he was nicknamed Danny Dimes, right? Because of the deep, explosive plays that he had. And he was a kind of athletic, big arm, almost a project quarterback when he came out, and everyone was shocked at how high he was drafted. And then he kind of surprised people of how quickly he hit the ground running and looked good with those explosive plays. And then over the last few years of his career, they just completely evaporated and he stopped making big plays. He stopped making explosive, game changing, field flipping throws. And the bad was still there. We still had a quarterback that was making bad decisions, that had all the flaws in his game, but the positive had just completely disappeared from his game. And now you were just left wondering, well, what do you do with this guy? And it turns out when the offensive line falls apart, he makes that look worse. You know, one of his traits is he's really bad when the offensive line, when the protection is substandard. He sort of magnifies that problem. So now when you bring in Tyrod Taylor or Tommy DeVito, like the offense looks better because those guys are not making the line look even worse than a bad situation. And then this year, he's actually played better generally in the most part, but the touchdowns still haven't been there. It's this bizarre stat and fact now that he just hasn't had these passing touchdowns in his own building.
Before I let you go, Sam Monson is my guest of the 33rd team, and we're talking football, NFL, Bears football. This concerns the Bears, their run defense, best in the league last year, hovered around 10, 11 this year, and then after the last 2 weeks, they've plummeted to 14th. What's wrong? What do you see?
I mean, I think the loss of defensive linemen is going to be a problem for them. Andrew Billings is a really good player at this point in his career. Just incredible strength on that defensive line. They're going to have to sort of patch up that loss and try and figure out how they replace him, probably in the aggregate rather than with one person. But I think that's definitely the kind of loss on the interior that can affect the run game as a whole. I think the other thing is, it does feel like a defense that has been playing above itself a little bit for a long time now. And I think generally, you know, sometimes that regresses back to the mean, and the overall talent level of the group, particularly in the middle of that sort of spine, I think isn't quite as strong as it's been able to play for a while. So I think we're seeing some regression and some loss of personnel.
All right. Well, that's on that optimistic note. We're looking forward to the Patriots protecting Drake May by running the ball right down the Bears' throat. We look forward. Sam, thank you for your time. It's great. It was wonderful, and it was a great interest. We appreciate the knowledge.
Anytime. Take it easy.
All right. Sam Monson of the 33rd Team, 33rdteam.com. Go to the website. It's an all-star website. All things NFL. Take a break. When we come back, Matt Eberflus's Culture Club. Yeah, do you really want to hurt me? Well, I'd like to. I'd like to at least take your job away. And get a former bear weighing in on something like that. This is Saturday Suckage. Oh, and before we go, we normally play, like we still have the WKRP turkey drops to play. And we have our selection of Christmas and Hanukkah songs. There's actually a Christmas duet that is out, and if I did not see this coming, we'll get that to you before the hour's out as well. Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
A big reason is I believe the culture that's been building. I would say the culture, the coaches, because that's where it stems from. And then I'd also say that the love and support that the fans have been giving. They're ready, they're hungry, they're all excited, and so are we.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Indeed, Saturday Suckage, just like the big boys guy said. But first, we'll get back to the Bears culture. But first, listen to me. This Tuesday night, Layla Rahimi will be hosting Football After Dark at Gale Street Inn with special guest Jalen Johnson. They'll be talking football, there'll be a Q&A, food and beverage will be provided. If you'd like to win a pair of tickets to this exclusive event, head over to the 670 The Score page on X or Twitter, your choice, and click on the link to enter. Special thanks to our friends at AARP for giving fans this last chance at attending Football After Dark this Tuesday night. AARP, the younger you are, the more you need AARP. So, you came in with Caleb Williams talking about the Bears culture. The inexplicably still employed Matt Eberflus loves to talk about culture. Oh, so special. So good. So tight. So much insincerity. Eberflus tried to take the blame for all the crappiness in Arizona. They lost in Arizona. Yeah, sure. Now he's willing to take the blame. The week before, he was doubling down on his stupid decisions. The week before, he was doubling down on the offensive coordinator's stupid decisions. Yeah, they were fine. I confess, it was all about execution.
Yeah.
He heard about it. He heard players criticizing him. Well, I'm not sure that fits in with good culture. Players criticizing coaching decisions publicly.
No.
Not just the head coach, but the offensive coordinator, both inexplicably still employed.
Yeah, that's, I'm not going to comment on that.
Well, he did, though, at the Cardinals TD at the end of the half, the 53-yard run. He called a pass pressure. That's on me, he said. I called a pass defense, a pass pressure, and they ended up running the ball. I can make a better call there. That's on me. I do believe that our run defense needs to shore up when you have a big run like that. He took the blame. Yeah. Now he's willing to take responsibility for a bad defensive call. After he got pantsed nationally, starting with his own locker room the week before. And then he took the blame later after the, during the questioning of the horrible offense, that still hadn't scored a touchdown against Arizona. He took the blame for the offense. Yeah, I take all of that. That's all on me. That's all. The way it came out, this guy couldn't be more insincere and disingenuous. Half the captains came out to dump on his decisions or his offensive coordinator's decisions. They pointed out all the comically stupid stuff. You know, they made a point. One of the players made a point of saying, we don't stop practices when someone screws up and run it again until we get it right. And they go out in Arizona after that gutting loss in Washington, and they look like a team that didn't practice at all, didn't care. Who's listening? Who's got whose attention? They looked, well, you can consider whether they look stout or soft, but they looked ill-equipped. They looked unprepared. And he didn't come off like a real coach, like an actual coach. I played a tape last week of Dan Campbell. When they screwed, he screwed up the Buccaneers game. They had units coming on. We're going to go the field goal units on, too many men. It was just, oh my God, it was crazy. And Dan Campbell took the blame right then and there, right after the game. That's on me. I did that. And then I played the comparison of listening to Matt Eberflus saying, well, you know, it was the right call. If they, we don't need to cover the out. They're still got to throw you still got to throw the Hail Mary, right? We don't need to cover the out. No. Well, you had Commanders player and the Commanders head coach, a better defensive coordinator than Matt Eberflus, say, yeah, if we don't get that, we're gassed. We needed that. That was the most important play. And you have Eberflus loving to talk about the culture almost as much as you have George McCaskey talking about the Bears' history, neither of which does anything for you in the here and now, because there's no there. Where's your culture when your backbone is as soft as your run defense? I mean, if you're a Bears player, how can you respect How can you respect Eberflus yammering on about his beloved hits principle when Tyreek Stevenson played last week? Tyreek Stevenson just made the Bears a national punchline. He pantsed the organization, this heritage franchise that George McCaskey loves to talk about. And here's the guy yakking with fans on the most important play of the season, out there acting like a dope, violating Eberflus's silly high school principal, hits principal, dumbest play of the year, and he doesn't lose a game check? Eberflus is as soft as his run defense. How do you not suspend him for the game? How do you risk having the players in? How do you put your credibility on the line that way? What kind of culture is it? What kind of culture is it when your head coach can't come to suspend a player who messes up in that way, in such an important way, in such a laughable way, pantsing the organization, pantsing the coach, pantsing talk of discipline, pantsing the hits principle, and you can't suspend him for a game? The rest of the locker room looks at it like, this guy's got nothing. There's no backbone. There's nothing there. This principle doesn't mean anything. They played against Arizona like a team that didn't have much respect for the coach or the job or feared for any of that. Why would you fear for your job if a guy who did what Tyreek Stevenson did and led to what it led to, why would you respect or be afraid of that coach? And remember, titular GM Ryan Poles decided he didn't need an upgrade at coach. He's decided he still doesn't need an upgrade at head coach after all of this. Hallis Hall, stuck on stupid. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We take a break. We got to come back with a cultural zeitgeist. And we will come back with, well, a Christmas song I did not see coming. And other stuff and things and items and texts and some nonsense before we get out of here at 2 o'clock. This is Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Ohms. Ohms.
Ohms. Ohms.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Indeed, we are penetrating the culture here on Saturday Suckage, the cultural zeitgeist segment of the show. We're going to start with, well, I can't say I saw this coming. I didn't understand it when it flashed through my Twitter feed. But here it is. A Christmas duet. We're not at Thanksgiving. I understand that. Sean Sears nicely played the WKRP drop. It's what we do. And we have a selection of holiday songs we play, both Hanukkah-related and Christmas-related, whether it's the McKenzie Brothers or Darling Love's Christmas Time for the Jews. We have all of that. Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song. This is legit, honest. This is a duet of Stevie Nicks and, ta-da, Jason Kelsey. No lie. It is a true thing, true fact. It's called Maybe This Christmas, and it's real, and here's the first part of it.
Maybe this Christmas will mean something more. Maybe this year love will appear deeper than ever before.
And maybe forgiveness will ask us to call someone we love, someone we've lost, for reasons we can't quite recall. Maybe this Christmas,
maybe there'll be an open door. Maybe the star that shone before will shine once more.
That is Jason Kelsey. And Stevie Nicks and Jason Kelsey can sing, ladies and gentlemen. He can carry a tune.
When you sent that to me this morning, I fully expected this to be like a joke or something funny.
Right.
Like,
because everything else
song.
About Jason Kelsey right. is a joke.
That was heartfelt. That was nice. I didn't expect him to be able to sing.
And she's given it the way he's given it. And they're, oh my God, this is a real thing. It's not being played for laughs. The duet they recorded was for Jason Kelsey's annual charity album. I had no idea he has an annual charity album. But this year it's titled A Philly Special Christmas Party, and it's out now. The whole album won't be released for a while, November 22nd. It will include Boys to Men. That's a Philly special, right? Aren't they Philadelphia?
They are, yes, they are.
Yeah. And it will also include Jason's brother, Travis.
Oh, I've heard of him.
You heard of him?
Yeah, that's Taylor's boyfriend.
So Taylor Swift's got a boyfriend named Travis Kelsey. Travis Kelsey has a brother named Jason Kelsey. Stevie Nicks is a friend of Taylor Swift's. And here's Stevie Nicks and Jason Kelsey doing a duet for a charity album. So connect the dots, people. Last Wednesday, if you didn't know, was National Nachos Day. I, for one, did not know. I also did not know the history of nachos. Did you know the history of nachos, Sean?
No.
Do you like nachos?
I enjoy them, yeah.
Yeah. Me and Otter were talking about doing tacos tonight. We need tacos and Ritas and some Mexican food. So history tells us that Ignacio Nacho Anaya created the original nachos in 1943.
Wow.
I don't know if you thought they were older or younger.
I was going to say, I figured it was going to be like based off a different dish or something that we just kind of reappropriated.
According to his son, Nacho, every time I hear this, I think of...
Nacho Libre.
I think of... why am I drawing a blank on the Breaking Bad on Better Call Saul? Here, Nacho.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nacho. Don Hector. According to his son, Nacho was the maitre d' at the El Moderno restaurant and in Piedras Negras in Mexico. So one evening after the kitchen staff had left, a group of U.S. Army wives stationed at Fort Duncan in Eagle Pass came into the restaurant. After a long day of shopping, they were hungry and asked for a snack. Anaya prepared some tostadas cut into triangles. Well, we're starting to see how this came together. After topping them with shredded cheese and sliced jalapenos, the dish was heated in the oven. They were such a hit, the Army wives named the snack Nachos Special. That was before he could make another batch. And people from all over heard and came and tried them and loved them. And Nacho Special became nachos. That's it. And that was this week was the anniversary of the creation of nachos.
Omaha! Omaha!
So this is sort of left over, but I wanted to get to it because history was made when LeBron James played with Bronny. They two father son in not a father son game, but a real NBA game. Pro golfer Max Homa tweeted, "I wonder if when LeBron yells timeout, if Bronny thinks he's in trouble." That's a really good line. But a better line was had by Mike Beauvais. Must be a local guy. I'm not quite sure, but it showed up on my Twitter feed, and I needed to share this about LeBron James and Bronny James. And his tweet says, "LeBron James and Bronny James will become the first father-son duo to appear in the same game since William Legay Jr. and William Legay III in 2012. Now, I realize there might be people listening to this show who don't get that. That's a brilliant line. That's outstanding. That's the father and son team from South Side of Chicago that jumped over the railing and attacked Royals third base coach and were subsequently arrested for it. That is a brilliant, brilliant line, Mike Beauvais. The greatest compliment I can pay is the line is good enough to steal.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
Only in Canada. Like, we have these, you know, Florida man stories, right? Only in Canada. This came from Sauce Hockey. A Zamboni driver in Gatineau, Quebec, was arrested for resurfacing the ice under the influence. He was a drunk Zamboni driver. The video released by police shows the driver dressed like a kangaroo. Might have been your first tip. The video released by police shows the driver dressed like a kangaroo driving the Zamboni and then crashing. There's video of it. I've not seen any follow-up to that. And by the way, speaking of follow-up, as long as we're talking, a couple follow-ups. He's wearing a kangaroo outfit. And nobody knows he's drunk. Canada, Quebec. By the way, Jeremy Roenick went into, speaking of Canada, and Toronto, T-R-A-N-A, Toronto, English-speaking capital of hockey. Jeremy Roenick went into the Hockey Hall of Fame last night. He wasn't the only one, but he went in there, got his ring, and Lanny McDonald and the world's most famous mustache gave it. So congratulations to a guy who made the Hawks just such a terrific watch back in the 90s when they were worth watching.
That's awesome.
And following up on a couple other things, remember I mentioned the song Stuck in a Pagoda by Trisha Toyota? It was the Vapors who wrote, kind of hit with Turning Japanese. But two texters, Sharp, 847 texter, "Thanks for the great Dickies reference, Steve." Another 847 texter, "Pagoda is by the Dickies from 1979. So there you go. And this from goes for all of us from Adam Studzinski, Trash Panda. "In case anyone important was listening, no, I never produced your show while high." And then a smiley face. So you believe what you want to believe. If nobody important listened, as Trash Panda fears somebody might have been listened earlier, nobody important listened. I'll be back next week. We'll have another edition of Saturday Suckage, and maybe we'll have a new Bears coach. Wouldn't that be great? Thanks for listening. Thanks, Sean Sears. Thank you, everybody. Saturday Suckage on the Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
As God is my witness,
I thought turkeys could fly. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.